Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, you're listening to Known For, a filmography podcast, and this is one of our sort of spin-off episodes called Four and One More. This was previously a format of show which was exclusive to the Patreon, and now it's moving over to have a semi-regular spot on the main feed. So the idea of Four and One More is we give ourselves a subject. So we've previously done Quentin Tarantino films, Pixar films, and Steven Spielberg films. We pick our top four, our personal top four within that subject, and one more which isn't necessarily our fifth favourite, but one that we'd recommend or one that we think is interesting despite that. So this is the first one on the main feed in that format, and today we're talking about Four and One More of our favourite films from 2019. This is Bob Shoy, and this is my co-host.
Hi, it's Becca. So this, all of our 2019 Four and One More.
So aside from watching all the films we watched for the show, we actually managed to watch some new films too. We're lucky that we have the city we live in. We live in Leeds, so you have the Leeds International Film Festival is held here. So we attend that and get to see lots of new films at that.
Yeah, we saw a fair few before they were released, which was really cool.
And I actually found it hard to do this list because some of the films we watched for that pre-release screenings, and actually they're 2020 films, so I had to disregard some films which would have maybe been near my favorite. But we watch a lot of films. We live really near to a cinema, and we go to the cinema a lot anyway.
So this is all the films that came out in 2019.
Yes.
So it's not like everything that we watched in 2019. It's like films that came, that were released.
Yes.
In 2019.
And one exception here. We didn't get around to seeing the film, depending on where you live in the world, it's either titled Ford v Ferrari or Le Mans 66.
Mm.
It was a film we both really wanted to see.
I'm so gutted about that.
It won't be on either of our lists because it's the one film that might have gone near it that we didn't manage to see. I feel like had we seen it, this might have maybe not cracked mine, but possibly cracked yours.
Yeah, I feel like it could have been up there.
Yeah, this is a list with a caveat of like we didn't manage to see
it
that
was
one.
It was a really, really short showing in the UK.
Well, also, it came out around the time we were travelling and busy and doing all sorts of things. So we just missed it, unfortunately. But we did see a lot of the major releases. Another caveat is I don't think we came down on a decision for this, but whether or not we include just all films that came out in 2019 or we were discluding franchise films.
I've got like a notable mention for a franchise film.
Okay.
So maybe we'll do those separately.
I think I know what that's going to be. I've got two for my plus ones.
Okay.
One is a franchise film and one isn't, in case you had said the franchise film.
Okay.
I think we both know what we're talking about. So this was really tough. I think actually we're going to have kind of similar lists because I think we liked a lot of the same stuff this year.
Yeah. Should we just get into it?
How difficult did you find this first?
Like super difficult because there's like four films is not very many to choose from.
When you think of all the different genres, and we as film lovers, I wouldn't say we're snobby film lovers, because I go and see all the Marvel films and they're all fun. I love Star Wars films and this, that and the other. But then I also watch a lot of foreign cinema and I like going to the film festival. I like cinema in all its forms. So to narrow all those genres and types of film down to four is incredibly difficult.
Especially out of like, I've just had a quick count, like 50 films.
So we watched 50 films that were released in 2019.
Not quite, just under 50 films. Wow, okay. So we've got to choose four out of 50 films, and then one more notable mention that's kind of interesting.
This will be interesting then. I'll be interested. I think our lists are going to be so similar, but we'll see how it goes.
Okay, so what are we doing first then? Number four?
Yeah, 4-1, and then our plus ones at the end. So
I didn't get around to choosing my four yet because I panicked. So you go first.
I'll go first.
Okay.
My number four is Midsommar.
Whoa. Oh, you really like those.
This is a film that when I first watched it, I wasn't blown away by it. And it might be because I missed it initially. Like when it first came out, I wanted to see it. And I missed it at the cinema, unfortunately. And a lot of people would recommend it to me. Even if they didn't like it, they were like, you'll probably like this, though. And I was like, it's directed by Ari Aster, who did The Hereditary. And I loved Hereditary. And I think he's a really interesting guy. So I was really excited to see what he would follow up with. I finally got around to watching this when it was released on Blu-ray and streaming, and I really liked it. But because I'd waited and didn't see it straight away, and everyone had been like, I gotta watch it, at the time I felt a bit underwhelmed by it.
Right. Like it was too hyped up for you.
Yes, and I had such high expectations because Hereditary for me I loved and came completely out of the blue. Now I'm like eager to see how this guy's going to follow it up. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's pretty good. But then it's one of those ones had a long tail for me. Like, I kept thinking about this film.
It was
film.
In your head. It got to you.
Ever since. And then by the end of our time, we looked over the list we watched this year, I was like, yeah, actually, I've thought about that film so much more than maybe any other film.
Yeah.
So for that, it's my number four.
Why?
So it's billed as a horror film. I wouldn't say this was a horror film.
Yeah.
And the director himself says this isn't a horror film.
Yeah.
It's about cults and you know, that sort of thing. But it's not necessarily a horror film. It's playing on expectations and customs and you know, foreign situations. And it's a very interesting film. It's incredibly long and incredibly slow. And I know some people find it incredibly boring. But I just love the aesthetic. It was so different to Hereditary whilst being very similar. It was they're both about cults. Hereditary, everything is dark and gloomy. This is, everything is in the sunshine. So the horrific things are happening. It's bright sunshine and beautiful flowers everywhere.
It's like weird juxtaposition of horrific and like spectacularly like pretty looking.
Yeah, exactly. It's beautifully. It's a beautifully filmed film. Like it looks stunning.
Was it more creepy?
Yeah, in a way. Like this was creepy because I can imagine myself in these situations as someone who likes to travel and likes to be involved in other customs and wouldn't necessarily question another custom. If something's happening, I'm like, that's a bit iffy. I'm not going to question it. It's these people's custom. And that's how these foreigners go along and along and along without questioning things before things get way out of hand.
Take a turn for the worse.
Yeah. Florence Pugh is like maybe my MVP of the year. She's appeared in like 3 or 4 films and I thought she was great and different in all of them. This was my favorite performance of hers as well.
Yeah.
And just not necessarily a lot of dialogue, which made it so good, just a lot of facial acting. And there's a very famous scene. I won't want to spoil anything because anyone else hasn't seen this, but the disdain on her face after a certain event, when I would say an event that has a lot of flowers around it. The disdain on her facial acting after that is of shots that will like stick in my memory from the year, maybe my favorite shots of the year.
Wow. Powerful.
Yeah, and the imagery around her involving that is incredible. So there we go. I've rattled on. Like, this sounds like I'm talking about my film of the year. Like, as I can say, the more I talk about this film, the more I love it.
Yeah, sounds like super interesting. It's not my cup of tea, so I didn't watch
it. But and such just some incredibly disturbing imagery in this film as well, like shocking. Shocking. But I didn't like it as much as Hereditary, although I find it maybe more interesting than Hereditary. And that has been my case with 4 different films that came out this year I was excited for.
Yeah.
Where there were follow-ups of a debut from a filmmaker. I found their debut very interesting.
Yeah.
So Ari Aster did Hereditary. I found that film so just out of the blue and interesting. I was so excited for the follow-up. And this, I think, is a more complex and interesting film and maybe a better made film.
Right.
But for me, I didn't love it as much.
Do you think it's because like just that initial like impact that of something like
something new. Yeah, and then I'm
seeing about this a little bit on like a previous. Was it we spoke about it about Nightmare Before Christmas?
No, we spoke about this when we came out of seeing Little Women recently, and I had said I had the same experience with Little Women, which I really, really like that film. And I think Greta Gerwig's a really great filmmaker. I think Little Women is better than her debut, but I like Lady Bird more.
Right.
I love Lady Bird.
Yeah.
And even though I think Little Women's the better film, mm-hmm. I prefer Lady Bird.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Little Women's more complex, more competently made.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same with Hereditary and Midsommar. It's the same with Jordan Peele's film that came out this year, Us. I preferred Get Out, even though Us is maybe the better made film.
Mm-hmm.
And then, subjectively, and then the other one is Robert Eggers. He did The Witch, which I loved a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he did The Lighthouse this year, which I also really liked, but I liked The Witch more.
Right.
Even though The Lighthouse is maybe more complex and more interesting. So I've had this real similar experience four different times.
Yeah.
Of those four, spoilers for what's coming up in my list, that's the one that peaked the four.
Mm.
So of those four, that's the one that shone through the most.
Right.
So there we go. Little Women and The Lighthouse and Us are not on my top four.
Uh-oh.
There we go. So that's my number four, Midsommar. Wow, I really had a lot to say about Midsommar. I didn't realize until I started.
So my number four is The Irishman.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I think because of the incredible feat of engineering.
Okay.
Like the whole thing, it's really long. It's like the daddy of all like gangster movies. It's got everybody in it, basically.
It's like a big reunion.
Yeah, and it follows, Robert De Niro's character basically from like a young man right through to an old man. So
you see his entire life.
Yeah, so like the de-aging graphics that they've got on him are really, really great. I mean, they're definitely noticeable, but you kind of, we spoke about this when we came out of it, you just slip into it.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like after the initial shock of like, whoa, they've de-aged him, you just don't notice it anymore.
No.
After about 10 or 15 minutes, you kind of, your eyes are like accustomed to it and everybody else around him.
I found the whole film took a bit of getting into. We said this, it's such a long film and it tells such a long story that when you start watching it, that mumbly mafioso gangstery speak was hard to get into the rhythm of. And the de-aging tech was hard to get used to because it was obvious.
Visually.
But once your ears and your eyes slipped into it, it was like slipping into
like
a warm bath.
I've had it before with like 3D films and stuff where you'd have to take a few, like 5-10 minutes for your brain to actually kind of it tricks your brain with the 3D thing. So like when I first started watching with like 3D glasses and stuff, it's the same thing. Like you just have to, it takes a minute, but the overall experience was really cool.
Yeah.
And
we managed to see this on the big screen. A lot of people
at the
didn't
because
it's a Netflix original. But this was an advanced screening at
the film
festival.
This in Leeds Town Hall, which was like a fantastic experience because it was like this gorgeous, you know, I don't even know when the town hall was built, but it wasn't recently. It's pretty old and it's a really cool setting. And to see it on the big screen made it really special.
And that film is 3.5 hours long.
Yeah.
And we both made it through without using the toilet.
Yeah.
That was my feat of the year.
Yeah. So I just really liked it. I just think, like, even if you don't like gangster movies, you'll probably enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just a really cool story.
For me, it wasn't like as straightforward as like classic gangster movies. Like I always think of like in terms of gang. It's not my favorite genre.
No, me neither. But
my favorite I always think of is probably Goodfellas.
Yeah.
But for me, this wasn't just like, oh, it's Goodfellas again. They're getting the cast back together and stuff like that. It was different.
Mm.
You first think, oh, it's going to be the same old thing. But the fact that it is his whole life and you see maybe nearly an hour of the film of him as like an old man, like after his life.
Yeah.
Like the last act of the film is like this extra long epilogue and it's like, look how like sad these guys' lives are after the glory days.
Yeah.
So you get the coming up, you get the, you know, who's in whose pockets.
Yeah.
And then you get the sad, lonely ending. And and the de-aging stuff was interesting. And I thought the performances were like all around great.
Yeah, really good.
Seeing Joe Pesci like on the screen again.
It's really cool.
You forget how good he is because he's been in a lot of dodgy comedies and stuff over the years. But when you see him back in that setting, which suits him the most, you forget like how good he is. And he was like, for me, he was the standout in the film.
Yeah. So it was awesome. Just a really, really cool film with like very like incredible actors like doing the thing they do best, which is like gangster films. Like, it's just really cool.
Yeah, it was like it's like an obvious masterclass like of directing and acting and just
So writing. That's my number four. It's not like it's not my favorite film of the year, but I just like can't stop thinking about it because it's such an amazing like feat of engineering and getting all those actors together in the same place, like time and place to do it. And
we said it afterwards, just really like I don't want to see Scorsese do another gangster crime film. Like
this is it.
He's done it. This is like he's capped off that style of film for me. So
yeah,
good choice.
Moving on, what's your number three?
My number three, I wouldn't be surprised if this is on your list, is Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, it is on my list.
Is it? How far up your list is this?
It's the top.
It's your number one. Kind of thought it might be. So I'll let you go ahead first and tell me, why is this your favourite film of the year?
It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
I can't...
There we go. Thanks.
It tackles an incredibly tough subject in an extremely interesting and appropriate way, I think. The only way to combat like atrocities, like bygone atrocities, is like comedy, to just break them down. And there's so much incredible witty comedy in it alongside very like sober, dour moments at just the right balance of taking a subject about World War II and everything, sort of all of the, taking a subject like World War II and all of the atrocities that went along with it and making that into a comedy and not being like grotesque.
Didn't completely make light of the seriousness of some of the subjects. That is what was a pleasant surprise for me with this.
Yeah.
I would say when the film first started, I was laughing because it's funny. But I thought within the first 20 minutes, if this is all it is, this is going to fall flat for me. Like just a lot of like silly gags. And yeah, we're a funny film. And I think Taika Waititi's a very funny guy. He makes really funny films.
Yeah.
But for me, he's better when he can lay in some heart and some message, which then started to reveal itself to the point where, like, I would say by the halfway point, there's more of that than the comedy.
Yeah.
Which really took me by surprise. And then I ended up doing like a full like 180 on this film of like, this is going to be fine, to, oh, wow, this is really something special.
So good. Just the right balance of like everything in it. And
by starting so silly, it lays that in that serious edge slowly.
Yeah.
And it creeps up on you to the point where this is one of many films this year I openly cried whilst watching.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And I didn't think I'd be doing that, such a silly comedy.
Yeah, but I loved it. Like, it was so good. The messaging and everything and the treatment of it and, like, yeah, how they approached it and everything. All the actors were, like, incredible in it.
And for the lead actor, to cast an unknown child in a lead role is always risky, but he was really good.
Yeah.
And both the child actors were as well.
Yeah.
They were both, like, so, so good and, like, charismatic. And I wasn't like, ugh, when they were on screen. I wanted to watch them. And then it had like some really great actors in other roles. We had Sam Rockwell in it, one of our previous known for actors.
Oh, yeah, one of our faves.
And his character was so fun. Like, everyone was having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
For me, like, the real heart of the film was Scarlett Johansson's character. I actually thought she was really good in this.
Yeah. She's used very sparingly, but I think like in just the right way.
Yes. And she's very, like, in real life, when I've seen her in interviews and stuff and behind the scenes stuff, she always seems very, she has like a silly sense of humor and quite like fun. And you got a lot of that with her. I don't think she gets to do that like more comedy stuff very often.
Yeah.
And I was surprised like how good she was at it on screen.
Yeah.
Like, her character had like really funny moments and then like really heartfelt moments as well.
I just remember that we didn't really explain what the film was about, but
I think people know what this film's about, right?
Yeah, I
a
love
a kid has an invisible friend who's also Hitler.
Yeah, played by Taika Waititi.
Yeah,
who I love
in a completely over the top mock style.
Yeah, I love that Taika and his like New Zealand accent slash trying to do a German accent.
I feel like there's a lot of bad German accents, but it adds to the charm. Like, it's such a silly film and everyone's doing these bad German accents, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah, and it's so good. It just makes me like, every time I think about it, it makes me like kind of cry and also laugh at the same time, which I don't think is a bad
emotion.
I want
to talk about the stuff that made me like really upset, but I don't want to give any spoilers away, but it was good.
So yeah, that's my number one, and it's your number three.
I would like to know, I'm going to cut this. What made you cry in the film?
When?
Yeah, that was the same bit for me. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, really good film.
Yeah, I love it.
So that was your number one. That's my number three.
Yeah.
What's your number three?
My number three is Marriage Story.
Okay. I was really hoping this would be on your list. This was so close to being on my list. It's not quite in my top four.
Oh, okay.
When I think maybe you would expect this to be in my top four, because when we saw it, I was gushing about it a lot.
Really good.
There's a lot of people who don't like this film.
Why?
There's a big backlash to this film on Twitter. I don't really know why. I think it was really good. As a child whose parents went through a divorce, as lots of people have in this era, in this day and age, like, it rang true to me. Like, parents pulling in different directions, but both wanting the best for you.
And there's residual feelings, but kind of still knowing that it's the right thing to do at the end of the day, kind of thing.
I thought, again, like, Scarlett Johansson's an actress who takes like a lot of heat for certain choices she makes and certain things she says. But this year she's done some really fantastic roles. Like, I do like her, despite some reasons that some people don't. I think in Jojo Rabbit, and like as a supporting actress in that and as a lead in this, I think she was like had some amazing performances this year.
Yeah.
And Adam Driver also in this was like incredibly good.
I thought them together, like, the chemistry of them playing alongside each other was like really incredible in this film.
And the scene, it might be the situation we saw it in, because this is another one we saw advance at the film festival.
Yeah.
In a very old theatre. And the audience was so into it.
Yeah.
It made it so much better. Like, the funny bits, everyone was laughing uproariously. And the sad bits, you can hear like sniffles around the room. Like, everyone was so into this film.
Yeah.
It felt like everyone was on the same page with this film.
Yeah. Because it's a Netflix original, isn't it? So I suppose everybody else watching it just did it at the comfort of their living rooms.
Exactly.
And
it
was a bit of a different viewing experience.
And the scene that everyone like rips on Twitter, I don't know if people have seen this, there's the scene that everyone sort of rips on Twitter and are memeing and, lol, this isn't acting, this is cringy, blah, blah, blah. I feel like they're just watching a scene out of context, because in context of that film, that scene was like devastating. It was heart-wrenching. I don't know what people are talking about when they're laughing at it.
Is this the argument scene?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people were just laughing, like, oh, this is like acting 101. This is so cringy. This is like watching like theatre school.
It was so powerful.
In context, and once you let yourself get into that film, that scene is devastating.
Yeah.
And because Adam Driver's character, until that point, has not let his emotions out. He has tried to be the calm one all the way. And she's had her moments of like emotional outbursts and stuff.
Yeah.
And he finally just like, he's like a time bomb all the way
through.
You just like, he's going to break. And when he does, it's so like, everything comes out. And yeah, it is maybe cringy
explosive
to watch, because then moments in your life are fucking cringy to be a part of. And sometimes when you really break down and have these outbursts, if you think back and remember yourself in those moments, it doesn't feel like you.
Yeah.
It is embarrassing, but that's life.
Very like horrible to watch, like a fly on the wall and watch yourself back doing that kind of stuff. So, but I think actually that's almost a credit to his acting.
Yeah.
Like, it was so realistic.
I loved him in this role. I thought he was great.
Yeah.
And the film was, it was maybe more mainstream than a lot of Noah Baumbach's films.
Yeah.
But it was very well made.
His character's almost like kind of last attempt fighting at that point. And then he sort of cracks and...
It sounds like a simple premise, like a couple goes through a divorce, boom. You've seen a million
films
like that.
It's always complicated though, isn't it? And I think this film reflects that in a really... I mean, every situation is different, but I feel like this displayed it, like showcased it in a really...
For a simple premise, it really managed to be more than its simple premise, like as a film, like more artistically made, like more, it still had surprises in it. The way the characters interacted with each other felt it was funny, but like you can, it was natural. The way that he was so part of her family, and when he was around them, he was silly and goofy, and with her sister and her mum and stuff like that. And you're like, well, yeah, some people like that. Like it was interesting and fun, not like by the numbers, and it pulled some surprises. Like when they're in the bar and he just gets up and starts singing, then you watch Adam Driver sing for like 4 minutes. And then it just cuts to the next scene. It's like there's interesting things happening what could have been just kind of a simple film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this. This was really close to being my number four.
And Laura Dern was great as well.
Yeah.
She just popped up loads.
Well, she popped up in that and also Little Women in both kind of smaller roles.
Yeah.
Which was interesting because the directors are partners in real life and she was in both their films. We was just saying like maybe on one set she was like, I'm working with your
yeah, I think maybe there's stuff like that. I would be interested to know the back, like the connections, like who knows who and all that kind of thing. Yeah, it would be really cool.
Great choices.
That was my number three.
Okay, I'm really interested to hear what your number two is.
You first.
I think I know what your number two is, which makes me realize that my number two isn't on your list and I thought it would be.
Okay.
My number two is Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Oh, this is one of my plus ones.
Right, okay.
I'm so glad you put it on your list, though.
Yeah, I didn't think this would be on my list. And then when I looked over the list, I was like, that film was so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, it was a masterclass in filmmaking.
So good.
The framing was beautiful. The acting was so good. And this is a foreign film, so I like watching foreign films because sometimes you see performances from actors and actresses that you aren't as familiar with. They are completely new to you.
The dialogue was minimal, but it was so like well done.
Yeah, like, I mean, it was like a really good mix of a straightforward storyline, but real like laced in thick metaphor.
Yeah,
in a way that wasn't so like ham-fisted, and it was just nicely artistically made.
Yeah, it was gorgeous.
So this is basically a painter, a female painter, is employed.
She's commissioned by like this, what would you call her? She's sort of like an heiress, isn't she?
Yeah.
Like heiress's mother.
Yes.
To paint her daughter without her knowing because she won't sit because basically the portrait's for her potential husband.
Yeah, you would show the portrait of the woman and say, would you marry this woman?
Yeah, and but she doesn't want to comply.
Yeah, the woman doesn't want to get married.
Yeah.
So she employs an artist to move into their home and she is told
she is a companion
to lead her on walks because she's the woman who's being painted is going through a real fit of depression after her sister committed suicide.
And who was supposed to marry the same man.
So this woman is employed as a companion to guide her on walks. What she's secretly doing is watching her and analysing her face so that in the night she can secretly paint her to basically marry her off.
Fantastically done. So good.
But what is the real heart of that story is the reason the woman doesn't want to marry is that she's gay. And she realizes that through the film and she develops a kind of secret relationship and feelings with the painter.
Yeah.
So they're having this secret relationship with each other.
Yes.
And I wouldn't say more than that. That's enough of a hook. This was just a well-made, classy film, I thought.
Yeah, a really slow but fantastic burn.
Quite long, quite slow, but like it's masterfully made. That's what my note here is, like masterfully made.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Absolute perfect film.
It's all
film.
In French.
French film, yeah.
But I think it makes it all the more intriguing.
So yeah, not on your list. I was expecting this one to be on your list.
I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it because I really loved it.
I'm glad that our lists have been really different so far.
Yeah.
More different than ours.
Well, mostly because I just want to talk about more films because I didn't have enough room to pick all the films that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, just for people who haven't listened to the previous 411 Wars, these are normally short episodes. I feel like already this is going to be one of maybe the longest 411 War we've done. They're normally
they're
half
quite
an hour.
Snappy, but well, we've got a lot to talk about because there's some pretty good films this year.
Yes.
So my number two is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
This is my number one.
Whoa! Yes.
Yeah, this is so good.
Although, okay, so Quentin Tarantino's latest film, a twist on the murder of Sharon Tate.
Mm-hmm.
which basically is from the viewpoint of Leonardo DiCaprio's character, who is an actor, mm-hmm. and his stunt double, who is Brad Pitt's character.
Yeah.
And they sort of, Brad Pitt sort of follows him around. He's sort of, he's not really a washed up actor yet, but he's sort of on the decline.
He's a TV
slightly.
Actor who's, he's not really breaking in the way that he wants to be. He's sort of, he's just a TV actor.
Yeah. And it's 70s, isn't it?
69.
Okay. So it's like late 60s, 69, early 70s, mm-hmm. like kind of Hollywood scene, them driving around. There's such, like, such amazing shots of Brad Pitt just cruising around in
this,
like,
is my favorite
part
car. Of the film.
Like, it's so good.
This, like, Tarantino said in his interviews, I know, again, not everyone's a big Tarantino fan.
Mm.
I think this is technically the best he's done.
Yeah.
Even though it's not my favorite film he's done, I think this is his greatest. And he says, personally, this is his most personal film.
Yeah.
And you can feel the love he's put into it.
The music, like the art direction, is just incredible. And the Manson family stuff, like involvement.
It's happening in the background.
Yeah, it's like really, it just trickles along. And the sort of main focus is, yeah, Leo and like Brad's characters sort of doing their Hollywood day-to-day
stuff.
It's
just them existing in that era. And it's just an excuse to show loads of shots of Hollywood at that time.
Making films.
And I've seen so many people just be like, oh, it's the worst film Tarantino's done. It's so boring, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what are you getting?
This is like going
beautiful.
Back in time. It's going back in time to like the golden age.
And you, like I said,
Hollywood.
You really feel the love in the filmmaking that Tarantino has for that era. The nostalgia is like just there on screen, like every detail, every...
Yeah.
Yeah, I just could have like, I felt like I was cruising around LA with Brad Pitt when he's just driving around in his car, because he's also Leonardo DiCaprio's character's driver.
Yeah.
So
and he's
just
sort
a
of his handyman as well. He just
he just employs him as like a right-hand man.
Just keeps him around, and I think he's just happy to like
Because he
be
is
useful.
A washed-up stuntman. A lot of people want to employ him because he has a dark thing that happened in his past.
Yeah.
But he's good friends with Leonardo DiCaprio's character, so he keeps him around. He's
sort of more of his like companion and just his like odd job guy, like odd job body or whatever they call him.
So it's like an alternative history of the events of that time.
But if you don't, so I spoke to my sister and her fiance after they watched this, mm-hmm. and they like
they didn't actually finish watching.
Yeah, they didn't finish watching it. Like they turned it off, which I couldn't believe because I like love it so much. But they didn't. I think it's because they didn't know the history and the backstory of like Sharon Tate. And I think if you don't know that, like, before going into this film, you won't get as much from it.
No, because the film expects you to know some of that stuff. And it even hints at stuff like certain locations, certain things are referenced. And if you know the history, even just cursory, like I don't know that much about it.
It's just Easter eggs, isn't it? It's like, ooh.
You're just like, oh, he shouldn't be going there. Oh, I know what that place is. And it just builds that suspense in you because it becomes more and more suspenseful as the film goes on. It starts so casual and like flowing and free,
and
as
them...
the film goes on, it becomes more and more suspenseful and tense.
Yeah. And I think that's why it's so compelling at the end, with when events unravel.
Mm-hmm.
But
also because it's an alternative retelling of history.
Yeah,
knowing the actual events, seeing where it veers and turns away.
It's
you're
so
like,
good.
Oh, what's going on here? You're constantly just like, what's happening? Like,
and
that's
then,
not what happened. This might happen.
Your expectations are challenged, and that's what makes it so good.
Yeah, I love, love, love this film. Mm. And I haven't met another person that actually liked it, which is just driving me crazy. Everyone I speak to is like, oh, you liked that. And I'm like, yeah, it's my favorite film of the year. It's fantastic. But
so well done.
We talked a lot about this on our 411 More Tarantino Films. And so we're just sort of like pouring more sugar on this film.
So I loved it. And I'm glad it was your number one. It's my number two.
Mm-hmm. And we've already spoke about your number one.
Yeah.
Which was Jojo Rabbit.
So we're done.
Well, we've got our plus ones.
Yeah.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But we've already spoken about Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which was one I couldn't choose. I've been greedy with my plus ones, and I've got two.
I've got like six plus ones here, so.
So we've already talked about that. So one of my other plus ones we touched on was Little Women.
Right, okay.
Which I think deserves like an honourable mention because I thought it was incredible.
So my top four, I had like, my number four was really difficult. It was between three films.
Yeah.
And it was between Midsommar.
Yeah.
Marriage Story, which was on your list, we got to talk about it, and Little Women.
Yeah, so I think it was so close to being on my list.
I mean, it's an amazingly made film.
Yeah.
I'll say again, like, I'm an absolute, the things that make me most emotional in films aren't actually plot elements anymore.
Yeah.
I was tweeting about this a little while ago, and a lot of people agreed with me. I find myself crying at really odd things.
Yeah.
And this film, that happened to me in, but it was nothing to do with the plot.
Right.
It was just, there was a scene which was so nicely framed. When something is so well made, it makes me emotional because I'm like, what events in the universe conspire to make this one moment perfect?
Yeah.
And that is overwhelming to me in a sense that makes me emotional.
Yeah.
And I'm not sad, whatever, but I do feel like a tear run down. It's really fucking weird.
I cried in this film too.
I get it at gigs. I've had it at gigs. I go to a gig and like there's a performance which is so good and I'm like, I'm going to cry. Like, I can't believe that all these people came together and made this perfect song, performed it in this perfect way, and everyone here is feeling it in this way. This is incredible, like feat of chance and creativity. And I felt that in this film. Like there was certain, actually, you know what shot it was? It's not even like an amazing, incredible shot. There's a shot where the camera follows her running down the road.
Yeah.
And she's, I don't know where, I can't even remember what's happening. I just remember that shot. And it's just a very simple shot. Just the camera following the character running along the pavement.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so nicely framed and shot.
Yeah.
So.
I cried near the end.
Did you?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was about. I think it was just her.
Was it about cover?
No. Yeah. Oh, maybe.
Because that was incredibly sad.
Yeah. I think it was more like because she just had to like forego her character kind of thing. Anyway. So yeah, I really loved Little Women.
Yeah.
It was such a great film. And it's a really good period, like, drama piece. And such good actresses in it.
Great cast. Again, like, what I liked about this, I think Greta Gerwig is really interesting filmmaker. So she's only directed two films now. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it was Lady Bird and then this. And I just think she's both these films are quite straightforward. Like Lady Bird is just like a coming of age story. This story has been turned into a film like three or four times. But this felt like a very modern and different filmmaking way of doing it.
But still honoring the period like drama. Because I felt like the dialogue was really, it wasn't really modern, but it wasn't really old either. No. It was like really appropriate for the like time period of the piece. Which I found like really interesting because I was like, oh, it's not just like complicated.
And
like
the choice to move the time frame around as well.
Yeah,
you're watching
really
things very much out of order.
Yeah,
but it makes different parts of the story reveal at interesting times.
Yes,
and it's like there's two parallel storylines running at the same time, like the future events and the past events, and you're watching them slice back and forth until the past storyline meets up with the future for the last third of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite jarring. Like, I'd already been told that was the case, so I was went in prepared.
Anticipated it, yeah.
I was wondering how jarring that was to other people. But I think once my brain settled into it, I found it really interesting and kept you engaged. Because, like, oh, that's how that ends up for that person. So how does it get there?
Yeah.
And then you watch that happen.
Yeah.
So that was a really interesting choice as well.
So I really like that. So so that's one of my plus ones. What's your plus one?
Okay. So I've got two plus ones for a reason.
Right.
Because I didn't know if we were doing franchise films or not.
Right.
I didn't know how interesting that would be.
Mm-hmm.
So I've kind of got my franchise film.
Right. And your
My other film.
Okay.
So my franchise film is Avengers Endgame.
Okay.
You know, this is a film which 10 years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
On its own, it's not necessarily an amazing film.
I was going to say the same thing, like,
but
the
with
gravitas.
The history of 22 films leading up to it, I think it's 22, like, what an amazing combination of 22. And it is like a greatest hits tour. You're literally traveling through the old films of like, remember this, remember that. And not everyone likes the Marvel films, but I think you would be quite snobbish to not agree that this is an incredible feat of cinema. Like, no other franchise has gone for 10 years of 22 films building up to a culmination. Like I said to you when we came out, if they never made another Marvel film, I would be totally satisfied with that ending.
It's crazy to think how much pressure they were under to sum up all that kind of back history and how well they pulled it off.
Yeah, it was such a satisfying conclusion to that saga.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who have just said, oh, I'm not going to watch anymore now. Like, I'm happy. Like, I'm done with the Marvel films. I get the formula. I've seen a satisfying ending and now I'm done.
Fair enough.
But what
it's a really good, like, kind of end point for that.
What I like about the Marvel films, and like I said, I'm not a snobby film consumer in the slightest. I got fucking Portrait of a Lady on Fire as my number two film of the year. But I also loved Avengers Endgame. Like, I loved it. When we saw this in the cinema, we saw this opening night, and the hype, and do you remember the audience?
Yeah.
People were cheering and screaming. We're in an English cinema. This is not normal here.
Yeah.
But certain moments of that film, people were cheering, and like the atmosphere in the room was like contagious.
Yeah.
And that is a feat. So I think you'd have to be quite a snob to say this isn't a feat of modern filmmaking.
Yeah.
That's brought this many people together. And what I was going to say is what I like about the Marvel films is they do play with different genres. People say there's too many.
Yeah, a bit of everything.
People say there's too many superhero films nowadays.
Mm.
And I don't think that's the case. I think the case is that there's a new genre of cinema now.
Yeah.
So if you compare how many superhero films are in a year to how many like comedies are in a year or how many like romance films are in a year, it's probably equal.
Mm.
It's just we didn't have this genre before.
Mm.
So now people are like, oh, it's just cinema. It's just superhero films all the time. Well, it feels that way because there's a whole new genre of films taking up space and they're expensive to make. So there's a lot of heavy marketing on them.
Mm.
In the grand scheme of things, there's probably as much as any other genre.
And they're owned by like one of the biggest companies.
And there's a studio that makes only superhero films, which is the Marvel ones.
Yeah, it's dedicated. They've got a dedicated team.
But what I like about them is the different characters' films will dabble in different genres
alongside that.
And I think that's very smart and good. They all have their like house style.
Yeah.
But then you watch the Ant-Man films and they're more like heist comedies. And then you watch the Guardians of the Galaxy films and it's like a sci-fi film. And you watch the Captain America films and they're like, you know, spy movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Like I get a different vibe depending on what type of film I want to watch and what characters' films I'm watching.
I think that's really well. And like you said, they all like complement each other and they do kind of fit in well alongside one another. And then all the characters culminating in Endgame, they just...
And you can,
like the chemistry between them all is like really interesting. And
you can choose your level of engagement as well.
Mm.
Like the Avengers films are like the big film, like the big... overarching story, but you could be like, you know, I don't like the Iron Man. I don't like Iron Man as a character. I didn't watch the Iron Man films. You'll still understand what's going on when you watch the Avengers movies if you're watching them for the other characters. But it's just the level of involvement you want. Like you'll get more if you watch the other films. So if you've watched the Iron Man films, you'll get more of the things they're referencing in the ensemble films.
Mm.
I was really satisfied with this.
Yeah.
And that's why.
It was really well done.
It's my plus one for franchise.
Mm-hmm.
My plus one beside that, this is tough. It's between two.
Right.
I really liked both of these. I'm going to go for, this might surprise you, The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Whoa, that is a surprising shout.
Yeah. So this is my plus one. This is my real plus one. I just wanted to shout out Endgame. This is my plus one because it wasn't necessarily my favorite storyline.
Mm-hmm.
The story didn't blow me away. Like, it was interesting and unique and weird, but it was so different.
Mm.
Is what I liked about it. The framing and, like, the just the framing of the shots, and even the aspect ratio of the whole film was slightly different. The performances were slightly off kilter. Especially, I want to get the actor's name, especially Jonathan Majors' character.
Mm-hmm.
So he plays like the main character's friend, who's like a aspiring writer.
Yes.
His character was so different and off kilter and strange.
Fascinating to watch.
That he was, magnetic to watch. Like, I was interested in him when he was on screen. I'm not that knowledgeable about the situation in San Francisco, and this is a lot about, if you're from San Francisco, you'd get a lot out of this film. And anyone I've seen on Twitter who lives in San Francisco is like, loves this film because it's all about the gentrification of San Francisco and the heritage of the city and what's happening in the city. But you're getting it from this very strange perspective. And I just thought, even though the main storyline of it I liked it, but it wasn't like my favorite story of the year. Just the way it was made was so different and the performances were so different that I wanted to shout this one out. I found this a really interestingly made film and really just a different film. So The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
I really liked it as well. You're right, just so different. My franchise shout out would be John Wick 3.
I love John Wick 3 as well.
Just kind of, I feel like this episode has just been like, it was amazing.
Amazing. We're talking about our favourite films.
What more can you say if you've not seen John Wick?
If you want, Keanu Reeves kills someone with a book within the first 10 minutes.
Ta-da!
Put that on the poster.
Must watch.
Just why writing that on a black poster?
Yeah.
If you think that's stupid, you probably won't like the film. If you think that's stupid but awesome,
I want to watch it.
Then go watch it, because it's like, there's no combat like the fight scenes in the John Wick films. There's nothing like them. It's like they invented their own form of fighting. And if you just want to watch a string of cool fight scenes, which sometimes that's all I want to see, John Wick films are really great for that.
It's a third one, and I would recommend seeing them all.
Yes.
The story.
They're getting better. I know some people didn't like, they think they're getting worse. I think they're getting better. I think a lot of people agree the second one's the best.
Yeah.
I think I might have liked this one the most. It was so just balls to the wall crazy.
Yeah.
There's a fight scene with him and Halle Berry where she's using basically her dogs as her fists. She's just like, get him, boy.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous when you say it out loud. When you're watching it, you're like, awesome.
Yeah. It's so good.
It's brains out awesome fun.
Yeah, it's just like a really good watch. And like aesthetically, super good looking.
Yeah.
So yeah, not going to say much more about it. What can you?
People like those films or they don't.
Honourable mention, Parasite.
Okay, so this one.
It's not, this is where we've just left plus ones. I just want to talk about more films.
This one's difficult because this isn't actually out in the UK till 2020.
Right, okay.
We managed to see a certain advanced screening.
Yeah.
This came out in America like in summer 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like technically a 2019 film, even though it isn't actually out in the UK. But then UK listeners, hey, check this out when it comes to cinema, like at the end of this month.
Yep. Really cool. Korean made. Is it Korean made?
Yeah. Korean film.
Really cool Korean.
I'm getting the name of the director. He's really good.
He's done a couple of other ones that we've watched.
Yeah, he's a really good filmmaker. He made Snowpiercer. He made Okja. Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah.
Is the director.
And really good watch. Not really going to give any spoilers because obviously, probably haven't seen it yet.
This is a film you want to go to with no knowledge.
Yeah.
Which is what I was told, which is why when I watched it, I went in with no knowledge.
Yep.
I just knew the director's pedigree, and thought, okay, I'm in.
Mm-hmm. Go and see that when it's out.
It's full of surprises. So is that your actual plus one?
Little Women was my actual plus one.
Oh, we're just talking about other films now.
We're just like going on.
Okay,
I
forgot we talked about it. So Little Women was your plus one.
Yeah.
And you wanted to shout out John Wick 3 as a franchise film.
One.
This is just your honourable mention.
Yeah. I'm just adding more.
Well, can I give another honourable mention then?
Yeah, why not?
I've got one more that's just close to my list I want to give an honourable mention for. The Farewell.
Okay. Yeah, that was good.
This was another film that made me cry.
I suppose, okay, so maybe these are like foreign films then.
Yeah, maybe this is our spotlight on foreign films. This is a Chinese film. Mm. It's like one English-speaking character.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like 80-90% in Mandarin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I found this to be very similar in tone, I said at the time, to Lost in Translation.
Yeah.
If you like Lost in Translation, this is quite similar. It's quite like off-kilter, slightly comedic, but
just
also
watching life unfold, really.
Yeah, from an outsider's perspective. Because the main character, even though she's from China,
she lives in America.
She's lived in New York since she was like
six, I think.
Yeah, very young. Might even be younger than that. I can't remember. But since she was very young.
Yeah.
So it's her going back to China
for a family event.
And you're seeing that country through her lens. And it just felt the pacing and the tone of comedy that happened in this film felt very similar to Lost in Translation for me, which is a film I love. So that's a comparison.
I feel like more storyline happens in this than in Lost in Translation.
Yeah, there's definitely
a
main story.
The tone is quite similar, yeah. So it was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Film. Really cool.
Yeah.
Nice one. Any more?
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of films. What other things? I thought Toy Story 4 was really fun.
Yeah.
Maybe because my expectations were like through the floor for that. I thought it was going to be shite. And I loved that film. Like, I thought it was a really good, like as good as the other Toy Story films. So when people say it's the shittest one, I'm like, no, this is like as good as the others.
I felt like it was more of like an addendum, but it wasn't like an...
It was like a great epilogue.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you don't often get.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
well,
I really
of course
that.
It's going to be great because the whole Toy Story like team is super great. So
Fighting With My Family.
Yeah, that's
was
a
really
cool.
Sort of overlooked film. I love that film. Florence Pugh again, like my MVP of the year. Really fun film directed by Stephen Merchant, based on a true story. I really liked Fighting With My Family. That's on Netflix now.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to watch that, people,
watch that.
I recommend that. I mentioned it earlier, but Us, I did really like it. Some people were disappointed by it after Get Out, which was just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But I really did like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of heavy metaphor in it, but I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Dolomite Is My Name was a good one.
What's that?
Dolomite Is My Name.
Oh, Dolomite Is My Name. Yeah, that's funny.
It's really funny.
That's not on my list, but yeah, that was a surprise.
That's a Netflix original, isn't
Netflix,
it?
Netflix, yeah.
Yeah, with Eddie Murphy, which was really funny and definitely worth a watch.
One more I recommend is Knives Out.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Knives Out, really, really good, fun
Don't
film.
Don't read up on anything before you go and see it.
No, it's a whodunit. It's a classic whodunit.
Yeah, it was really good. All the actors were fantastic in it. And Daniel Craig puts on a really interesting accent.
Yeah,
so
it's basically like CSI Southern, Kentucky or whatever.
Southern twang. So if anything, just go and see it for that.
I heard that Rian Johnson's considering doing a follow-up featuring Daniel Craig's character. Like he's going to be like the thread to another... Like mystery film.
Murder mystery.
But he's the linking character.
That'd be cool.
Him investigating another mystery.
He's the
so I'll
new,
be up for that.
Poirot.
Yeah, basically. Like, I'll be up for that. That's really fun. Yeah, Knives Out, that was a really good film. And the loads of stuff. I'm not talking about a good cast. Like so many good people in that film. Massive ensemble cast. But the... And I reckon I knew everyone in that film apart from the main character.
Yeah.
She was great. And she was really good. I really, really liked her. I'm going to get her name up so I can just credit her. Ana de Armas.
Mm-hmm.
She played the main character and I wasn't familiar with her in anything else, but she was brilliant and the rest of the cast was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I really, especially like Michael Shannon, I thought he was really funny in it.
Yeah. Another film, animated Steven Universe.
Steven Universe the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really only cool. If you've actually a fan of Steven Universe already, because he really is heavy on lore.
Yeah.
If you watch that without having seen any of the series, you'll be very confused. And it's a big gay musical as well.
Yeah. It was really fun and cool to end like, how many series are there? I don't know, loads of series of Steven Universe.
I think we could just keep listing films. It's been a really good year for films. As you can tell, we liked
a lot
of them.
We got carried away there, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, this is an hour-long episode for something that we normally make 40 minutes. But yeah, we'll close out now. So just to close us out, do you want to recap what your 4+1 were?
Number 4, The Irishman. Number 3, Marriage Story. Number 2, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Number 1, Jojo Rabbit. And my plus one was Little Women.
So my number four was Midsommar. My number three was Jojo Rabbit. My number two was Portrait of a Lady on Fire. And my number one was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. My plus one was The Last Black Man in San Francisco, with an honourable mention to Avengers Endgame as a franchise highlight of the year.
My honourable franchise mention was John Wick 3. And let's say our foreign films.
Well, I got a foreign film as my number two. Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Oh, okay. Our foreign film honourable mentions. Mine was Parasite.
Mine was The Farewell.
Cool.
So it's a lot of films, and like some
what
of those,
an amazing year.
Some of those are really mainstream. Some of those you might have seen on your streaming services and thought, I don't know what that is. Hopefully, you've checked them out. Some of them you might not have heard of at all, and maybe you might want to check out based on our description. I don't know, The Farewell or Parasite, which is out really soon, so check that out in cinema if you can. Like, go and support these smaller or foreign films, because there's some really good stuff that flies under the radar.
And if you did see Le Mans 66, let us know.
Oh yeah, because I feel like that might have been on Becca's list had that come out.
Have we managed to see it? So yeah, what a year, 2019. Some pretty amazing films.
Yeah, and I don't really off the top of my head know what's coming this year, because I've been so busy with everything else.
Mopping up sort of like the last dribs and drabs.
So I don't know what's coming this year.
No.
I'm excited to see what's coming this year.
Yeah.
I will be attending Leeds International again.
It won't be till like November, December time though.
Coming up next on the feed, you're going to hear the Sigourney Weaver episode of Known For.
Just regular watching format. Loads of her films at the moment.
When the Oscars get announced,
we
will do a special episode, because we do something called the Oscars game, which is a personal game that we've ran for the last few years. We'll do an episode. It'll be a two-part episode on our Oscars bets.
Yeah.
The speculation and the results, and that'll be a fun thing to put out on.
We'll explain more about what that is in the episode.
So actually, because they're getting announced really soon, they're getting announced like in the next few days, so that episode will probably be out before the Sigourney Weaver one.
Yeah.
So expect that, then the Sigourney one, and then we're working on the Leonardo DiCaprio episode.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah,
loads of stuff coming up.
You will get the odd one of these 411 Wars from now on the main feed. They're really fun to do. I hope you enjoy listening to them. I will also just let everyone know my stance, because I know a lot of people are interested in this. As a lifelong Star Wars fan,
Oh god,
I did not like Episode 9. I'm sorry. That's why we didn't mention it. I'm heartbroken myself.
I'm so sad.
But unfortunately,
I wish I loved
like it,
but so much of it disappointed me.
But that is a volatile subject, so we'll end it there. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.